All rights reserved. We reserve all rights. As many people are awakening to the fact that viruses are nothing more than sub-microscopic particles of dead cell debris, virus, dead cell debris, that come from cells dying either naturally from apoptosis, meaning natural programmed cell death, or cells that are dying from necrosis due to over-acidity and toxicity in the blood, and that virus particles are neither airborne nor contagious, nor do they cause any disease or illness, a fair too many people are still not understanding that all of germ theory is debunked. This includes bacteria, fungus, and mold. There are no such thing as contagious bacterial infections any more than there are contagious viruses. Both are in the realm of leprechauns and unicorns. Viruses are simply dead cell debris. This is a dying cell, and these are viruses, the debris from the dying cell. And bacteria and germs are simply dead cell debris eaters. These bacteria are simply the body's janitors. Their job is to eat and remove this dying cell's viral debris and transmute that debris into fuel and energy without photosynthesis. As we've pointed out in several previous films, Dr. Fraser of Canada and Dr. Powell of California have experimented with billions of germs of all varieties. That includes all known bacterial forms, but have been unable to produce a single disease by the introduction of germs into human subjects. Dr. Waite tried the same for years to prove the germ theory, but he too could not do so. Dr. Cowan is correct when he states that no one has ever caused any disease in any person or animal by introducing into them just a pure isolated bacteria or virus, ever. The germ theory of disease is the origin of the myth of contagion. It is just a theory, not a fact, and it applies to all bacteria and germs, not just virus particles made out of dead cell debris. And here is the heart of all of the confusion. Though germs themselves are neither contagious, harmful, or toxic, under certain conditions, the byproducts of a small percentage of these germs can be highly toxic and poisonous. Snakes are an excellent analogy for understanding germs and bacterium. Out of 3,000 known species of snakes, only 600 or 20% of those species are even venomous, and only 200 species or 7% of all snakes carry a venom able to significantly harm or kill a human. 90% of those rare dangerous kinds of snakes live in places where humans very rarely go or encounter them, unless purposely looking for them. None of those snakes or their fangs are dangerous to humans. It is the venom byproduct that the snakes can produce that can be harmful or fatal. If you remove the poison glands from a cobra, it can bite you all at once. It will not kill you. You can even cook and eat a poisonous snake. Snakes and snake bites are not fatal or harmful. The poisonous venom byproduct or waste product of 7% of snakes injected into your bloodstream is what is harmful or fatal. Germs are no different. Your own body has trillions of them inside of you at all times, eating your viral dead cell debris and waste products. You can also eat germs, breathe them in, drink them, or even in the case of scientists like Dr. Fraser, Dr. Powell, and Dr. Waite, you can isolate these germs by soaking them or macerating them in a solution, pouring that solution through a nanofilter to get out all other particles and debris, spin that fluid in a density gradient centrifuge machine until all of the same kind of germs are in one band together, suck that band out with a pipette, and inject that isolated germ or bacteria into a human subject, and nothing will happen. Not one person has ever been made sick by doing this without adding some other poisonous chemical or tissue to the injection. Not one. Germs themselves do not cause disease, just like snakes and snake bites do not cause illness or death. However, just like the snakes, around 2% of different germ forms can start producing highly toxic waste byproducts when they are suddenly living in an oxygen-deprived or highly acidic putrefying environment, like a dead or dying organism. Just like the snakes that can produce highly toxic venomous byproducts, it is not these germs themselves that cause illness. It is ingesting or injecting the poisonous waste byproducts of their fermentation that is toxic. Snake, germ. Snake venom, germ venom. In the 1800s, Rudolf Virchow introduced the idea of using microscopes for autopsies, and scientists like himself, the chemist Louis Pasteur and Crookes, found bacteria in some of the throats and saliva of dead rotting corpses of people who had died of scarlet fever and pneumonia. They came up with the germ theory of disease, postulating that these bacteria must be secreting some kind of pathogenic poisonous toxin that was killing the cells of these people and causing their deaths. The first problem is, they didn't always find these bacteria in the autopsies of people who died of scarlet fever and pneumonia. So how do you explain their deaths? That's like assuming fire is the cause of all duck deaths because we found all of these burnt duck corpses, but can't explain why these duck corpses have no burn marks. If germs are the sole cause of scarlet fever, tuberculosis, and pneumonia, then the same germs must be found in all people with these diseases, not just some of them. And they aren't. An inconvenient fact the big pharma cult hides from the general public. The second problem was, the fields of biochemistry and molecular biology were not advanced in the 1800s, and we now know that bacteria do not produce toxins, but normal enzymes like amylases, lipases, and proteases used in food and alcohol fermentation or the production of lactates that either do not appear in a healthy human being or, if they do, never in such an amount as to make them dangerous. Enzymes are simply proteins that serve two functions. They can either take an advanced molecule like food or even snake venom and break them down into smaller materials that can be reused by the body or eliminated as waste, or they can take smaller molecules and bind them together to make more advanced molecules that the body can use. Enzymes themselves are not poisonous or usually dangerous, but in certain cases, the breakdown byproducts like lactates and fermentation from them breaking down these complex materials can be highly toxic to the human body. If you don't believe that, go leave an egg and potato salad in the summer sun for a week and then eat it and see what happens to you. But it's not the bacteria themselves or their enzymes that will make you sick. It's the putrefied waste byproduct of the complex organic molecules that they break down that are sometimes poisonous. If you eat a turd out of your toilet, it's not the anaerobic bacteria and germs living in your turd that will make you sick. It's the turd in your turd that will make you sick. Germs are no more contagious than a turd floating in your toilet. Do you wear a surgical mask every time you go into a public toilet? Certain enzymes, like snake venom, when injected directly into your bloodstream through a snake bite, can break down your own internal organ and tissue molecules and are dangerous. But if you drink that same exact enzyme venom, your own stomach acid and enzymes break down that venom and render it harmless to you. So bacterial enzymes are not harmful to eat, only the poisonous tissue waste product of their fermentation.
A lot of people ask me, what's the difference between poison and venom? The difference between poison and venom is this. If venom is injected into the bloodstream, it can cause death. If venom is taken orally, it is completely harmless. Venom is actually saliva. It is modified through the gland of the snake. It is composed of enzymes and proteins. If taken orally, it is neutralized by the stomach acids and is completely harmless. If poison is injected into the bloodstream, it can cause death. If poison is taken orally, it can also cause death. And that is the difference between venom and poison. What I have here is a champagne glass for a small demonstration. What I'm going to do is extract venom and drink it. The yellow secretion you see coming through the fangs is actual venom. Venom is composed of enzymes and proteins. These enzymes and proteins are naturally found in your own saliva. If taken orally, venom is completely harmless. I'm going to apply water to the venom to make it taste a little better and then swallow it. Bottoms up.
If a cobra bit you, you would die before your body had the 8 to 10 weeks needed to produce the enzymes needed to break down that venom before it could deteriorate your organ tissue and kill you. This is why snake antivenom is made of serums of the blood of horses, goats, sheep, donkeys, rabbits, chickens, camels, even dogs and cats that have had minute amounts of snake venom injected into them and have created enzymes in their blood over 8 to 10 weeks that break apart that snake venom before it can break apart any bodily tissue. Now, they inject you with a possum blood serum, which already has natural enzymes in their blood that can withstand 80 rattlesnake or even coral snake bites. If a rattlesnake bit you, you'd be racing to the nearest hospital looking for animal enzymes to neutralize that poison. You wouldn't pick up the snake and make it bite you again. Yet these people talk you into doing the exact same thing to you and your children, and suddenly you're dancing around on TikTok, bragging about how little you like to use your brain for understanding important things. It was noticed since ancient times that alcoholics seemed to be immune to getting sick from large quantities of alcohol. It was falsely believed that by slowly poisoning themselves every day, they somehow built up an immunity to the toxins in the alcohol. Of course, we now know through biochemistry that in reality, just like antivenoms are manufactured, the bodies of alcoholics, expecting to be poisoned constantly, start to produce enzymes that neutralize a large portion of the toxins in the alcohol. It does not make them immune to alcohol toxins. It just lessens the dose of the poison, so they need to drink more of it to get the same poisoning that a person who rarely drinks would get from just drinking one glass. If an alcoholic who drinks 2 bottles of wine a day stops drinking wine for a few months, their body will stop producing those enzymes, and they will fall over sick as a dog if they try to drink 2 bottles of wine with no enzymes to neutralize the majority of the poison. In fact, the germ fermentation waste product known as alcohol is at the root of the bogus theory about us having an immune system, antibodies or antivenoms, inoculation, vaccinations, and immunization, driven by the erroneous fallacy that you can somehow build up immunity to poisons and toxins by poisoning yourself. How many times have you heard yourself or others falsely saying something like this.
Besides, what do you think you have an immune system for? It's for killing germs. But it needs practice. It needs germs to practice on. When I was a little boy in New York City in the 1940s, we swam in the Hudson River, and it was filled with raw sewage, okay? We swam in raw sewage, you know, to cool off. And at that time, the big fear was polio. Thousands of kids died from polio every year. But you know something? In my neighborhood, no one ever got polio. No one, ever. You know why? Because we swam in raw sewage. It strengthened our immune systems. The polio never had a prayer. We were tempered in raw shit. So, I don't get colds, I don't get flu, I don't get headaches, I don't get upset stomachs. And you know why? Because I got a good, strong immune system, and it gets a lot of practice.
I'm sorry, George, but our body's so-called immune system is not to get rid of germs. Germs are the integral part of the body's so-called immune system, and part of the reason you didn't get sick from swimming in raw shit. Germs are the body's janitors, and their job is to eliminate all of the toxins and dead cell debris from the body and transmute that debris into other usable energy by the body's cells and other bacteria. These germs are not killing these strawberries or making them sick, and these strawberries did not catch these germs from the atmosphere around them. These strawberries are dead and dying already from being picked from the vine that feeds them oxygen, water, and mineral nutrients, and the germs are getting rid of the dead cell debris. Germs, dead cell debris eaters. You can see them clear as day coming from inside the strawberries, starting in the strawberries on the inside bottom of the pile that are getting the least light and oxygen exposure. If the bogus germ theory were correct, the outside strawberries would be exposed to contagious flying unicorn germs first, and the inside bottom ones would be the most protected and obviously the last to mold. Germs come from inside of the organism. Just like the tiny percentage of snakes that are poisonous live where humans rarely encounter them, the tiny percentage of germs that create a toxic fermentation or lactate byproduct only live in an anaerobic environment that have no oxygen, meaning they live in dead or dying oxygen-starved human and animal corpses or rotting plant tissue. It is true, a tiny percent of these oxygen-deprived anaerobic bacteria can produce highly deadly toxins from fermentation as they break down dead, rotting animal and vegetable flesh. But unless you're actively seeking these toxins out to eat and drink, as most of them taste and smell too putrid and foul to eat or drink without vomiting, unless you inject these toxins directly into your bloodstream, like vaccines do, being afraid of catching the germs that created the putrefied waste is like walking around Oslo, Norway, in constant fear of an Indian king cobra attacking you. With quaxines, they actually do inject you with the dead or dying, putrefying, poisonous, rotting flesh of sick, cancerous monkey kidney tissue, aborted fetal tissue, sick cow bovine tissue fluids like calf serum or veal infusion broth or bovine albumin fraction. Then they add poisons like the toxic phenol red or toxic antibiotics like gentamicin and amphotericin. Sometimes they add some kidney tissue destroying enzymes like trypsin that kill and break down these cells, cause anaerobic bacteria to grow and create poisonous byproducts when breaking down this dead monkey, cow, and fetal tissue, and dissolve the cell walls into dead cell debris called viruses, and they inject this whole poisonous soup inside of your body to protect you from catching the same bacteria and viruses that are only created by the poisoning process of rotting tissue they used to make the vaccine in the first place. You could also go inject a turd from your toilet into yourself and achieve the exact same result as any vaccine will. Not immunity to any bacteria or viral dead cell debris, but severe toxemia. There are thousands of causes of toxemia and tens of thousands of expressions of that poisoning we call symptoms or dis-ease. But germs and dead cell debris viruses are not one of those causes. People are walking around for over a year now under extreme conditions of stress, anxiety, fear, and worry, causing major acidic buildup in their body's pH chemistry, causing tremendous cellular and tissue damage. They are under lockdown and not exercising. They have insomnia from worry. They are sitting around in front of electromagnetic devices like phones and computers more than normal. They are wearing masks constantly, stopping their ability to intake oxygen and exhale poisonous gases, breathing that poisonous gas back in and causing irreparable tissue and cellular death and damage. And then when their body goes into emergency detox conditions, they get sick and say, "Oh my God, it must be COVID. This is 10 times worse than any flu I've ever had." It's not COVID. You have just never poisoned yourself for a year straight before and suffered the symptoms of trying to clean out the damage of hypoxia, respiratory acidosis, embolus and blood clotting, CO2 poisoning from your mask, and you should be lucky you aren't having strokes, seizures, and heart attacks from doing this to yourself yet, and are still able to detox without dying. On top of that, many people have injected themselves with an experimental gene therapy that is programming their own RNA to constantly produce a poisonous foreign protein flow into their body that never shuts off. Components are injected into the arm and serve as instructions for the body's own cells to make foreign microbial proteins, a synonym for antigen, a synonym for toxin or poison. And their body now has to constantly produce energy to create white blood cells, enzymes, and bacteria to try and neutralize and remove that constant internal poisoning. This is called an autoimmune disease, and you don't need to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out the end result of this. Couple that with hypoxia, acidosis, embolus, and particulate poisoning from constant mask wearing, stress, lack of oxygen, and exercise. Very few people will survive that level of constant toxemia. The body only has so much energy. So how did we get here? It can all be traced back to these two political government assets and scientific frauds, Robert Koch and Louis Pasteur, whose purposely concocted fraudulent theories and experiments are still the basis of the bogus germ theory taught in allopathic medical schools to this day. The total damage, carnage, and human deaths accumulated from these two men's deceitful lies pales Hitler, Stalin, Mao, Pot, and Leopold combined. The fraud, Robert Koch, is considered the founder of medical bacteriology, and he is credited with discovering the bacteria he called tuberculobacillus, or Mycobacterium tuberculosis, in the dead rotting tissue and saliva of some, but not all of the subjects who had died from respiratory dis-ease. He claimed that these bacteria must have been the cause of the disease, but never explained why they weren't found in all of the subjects then, and still aren't to this day. What people don't know is that he had developed a poisonous magic drug he called tuberculin, and claimed it could cure tuberculosis. He broke the German laws by keeping the drug's ingredients secret and was forced to flee Berlin after he poisoned and killed thousands of people with his magic drug. Thank God they didn't bring that back on the market. During this time, the British had illegally seized the Suez Canal and now had significant political, military, and trade advantages over Germany, being able to sail back and forth from India with their troops and goods without having to sail all the way around Africa. So, Otto von Bismarck called Robert Koch back and offered him 100,000 Reichsmark to create a false argument and proof that the British were bringing back contagious anthrax, smallpox, and the plague from India, to justify demanding a quarantine, stopping the British ships from docking at any Mediterranean ports for supplies, so they wouldn't spread these completely made-up plagues to all of Europe, and allowing the Germans to shoot at their ships at Gibraltar if they tried to come through with their alleged fake contagious diseases. The problem is, it was already well known and scientifically proven by Koch's contemporaries that bacteria cannot produce toxins inside of a living organism or inside of an oxygen-rich aerobic environment. So Koch cheated, and he killed mice by injecting them with the toxins from dead corpses. Just like anyone can make anthrax by leaving a spoiled egg or potato salad in the summer sun for a week, Koch produced these anthrax toxins in a bovine meat broth, just like the vaccine industry does to this day, and he injected that poison into the vein of a mouse, and the mouse died. The spleen of that mouse became swollen with the toxins as it tried to clean them out of the bloodstream, and then Koch transplanted that poison-filled mouse spleen under the skin of a frog. The frog convulsed and died, and Koch claimed he had just transmitted anthrax. He did the exact same thing by transplanting a poisoned dead mouse spleen into a frog's lungs. The frog died, and then he claimed he had just proven lung anthrax is contagious and deadly. In other experiments, he was cutting open the tracheas of animals with incisions, inserting the poisonous lab-grown liquids continuously, and when the animals died, he claimed it was the germs in the fluid that killed the animals, not cutting open their throats and pumping poisonous liquids down it. He never did any control experiments by cutting open animal throats and pumping the same amount of a harmless water or saline solution down to see if the animal also died from the procedure and not the germs or toxic fluid. Which is ironic, considering to this day, Koch himself is credited for stealing Friedrich Gustav Henle's postulates, now called Koch's postulates, which claim you have to run the control group experiments on the healthy animals or tissue cultures, of which Koch himself never did any such thing in any of his own experiments, because Bismarck was paying him to fabricate a lie about contagious plagues for political use against British trade ships, not to conduct valid scientific experiments. Koch was also one of the first to start photographing bacteria through microscopes, but in order to do this, he had to dye the bacteria so they would show up on his film, and he received those colorant dyes from the petrochemical industry. Then, all of the other medical researchers took the same colorants, took healthy tissue, they acidified that healthy tissue, and discovered they had the same coloring reaction and grew the exact same bacteria that can be seen and photographed, just as Robert Koch did. But later, they discovered that these chemical colorant dyes actually killed bacteria by making holes in them, and others inhibited the DNA of the bacteria so that they can no longer reproduce and the bacteria die and return back to phage or spore form. From this, antibiotics were contrived from colorants. Ever wonder why they're filled with all of those bright, pretty colored beads? That's right. Our doctors are killing our body's janitorial bacteria that are trying to help us by cleaning toxins out of our body, by poisoning our body with something so toxic it even kills bacteria. And we call this medicine. IG Farben was a powerful cartel of chemical and dye manufacturing companies like BASF, Bayer, Hoechst, and later Merck, who pioneered the commercial manufacture of morphine and held a virtual monopoly on cocaine. All you have to do is look at how our elected democratic governments are all taking orders from non-elected big pharma think tanks and organizations while blatantly and shamefully peddling their experimental gene therapy quaxine, and you can easily understand the immense power this cartel has obtained since the days of Coke. Which brings us from Deutschland to France, and perhaps an even bigger fraud, Louis Pasteur. Pan is known symbolically as the trickster god, and also the god of panic and the nature of the human psyche. Pandemics have been scapegoats, or rather scapegoats, since ancient times, used to blame and suppress upheavals, to control starvation situations, cover up military slaughters of innocent civilians in warfare, and to expel or quarantine political threats, troublemakers, and undesirables. You can see this same old tired, fear-based emotional con game being played out today on awakened people, being labeled anti-vaxxers, health threats to the general society, and excluded from public participation without their quaxine passports. And the same thing was going on in Pasteur's day as well. The French were at war with Germany, and in order to garner public support, the French government hired Pasteur, just like Bismarck did with Coke, to blame the Germans for a smallpox epidemic and justify invading and killing them so it didn't spread to France, and to justify killing civilians in the process.
Those weapons of mass destruction got to be somewhere. Nope, no weapons over there. Maybe under here.
Unfortunately, Pasteur already knew from the works of his contemporaries, like Claude Bernard, Antoine Béchamp, and Max von Pettenkofer, that bacteria cannot and do not cause disease in living organisms. So he came up with the idea of a virus. There must be tiny invisible microscopic particles that cannot be seen under the microscope that are causing the disease, not the bacteria themselves, perhaps emitted by the bacteria. It's very hard to debunk a theory about something you cannot see or even identify if it exists or not. Pure evil genius. But how to prove contagion of this mythical, invisible virus particle and that it causes disease? As we learn from Pasteur's private diary, finally translated and released by Princeton University in 1993, Pasteur simply cheated. In one of his experiments, he pressed the poisonous rotting flesh from a dead animal through a filter, then injected that poisonous liquid into the brain of a dog that was tied vertically onto a pole. He used a third of the volume of the dog's brain for the liquid injection. The liquid comes shooting out the other side, the dog convulses, barks, foams from the mouth, and dies. Pasteur claimed it was his fabricated rabies virus that killed the dog, not filling a third of its head with that poisonous fluid from a rotting animal corpse. Pasteur also claimed he had an antidote to his virus, or what we call today a vaccine, and he admits in his private journal that he was going around injecting poisons he claimed to contain viruses into animals and then injecting harmless fluids into other animals and claiming the ones that died had not had his vaccination antidote and the ones that didn't die had been vaccinated with his antidote when none of them had. There are too many to mention in this film, but this guy, this fraud, is the father of vaccination and virology. The Germans had their antibiotics and chemotherapy, and the French now had their vaccinations. But what Pasteur didn't foresee was the advancement in microscopy technology that would actually allow future scientists to see the smaller than bacteria-sized particles under electron microscopes. Naturally, virologists were excited about this and started looking for these invisible particles that Pasteur claimed were causing contagious disease and illness. The problem is, because they are already falsely taught in their big pharma-controlled allopathic medical schools that Pasteur and Koch's theories were correct, and because Pasteur's diary wasn't released until over 100 years later, and because they are never taught in school to read and study the works of the people who already debunked germ theory over the last 170 years, like Bernard, Bechamp, Nissans, von Pettenkofer, Henley, Fraser, Powell, Waite, Rosenau, and these works are mysteriously missing from their special university medical libraries for med students, they are already working under a false assumption. They are just looking for the particles, not double-checking to see if the particles actually cause disease or are somehow airborne or contagious, which they aren't and don't. You can go see our 2-hour film, Virology Debunks Corona, for easy-to-understand details on virology fraud and what they actually do. But for the scope of this film, let's use an analogy. Let's say you were taught in school that it is a fact that the sky is probably theoretically actually a light purplish yellow, not blue. We'll call it the purple theory of sky. Even though there is zero proof of such a claim by using your own eyes, school said it was so, so you set out to prove it. Then you take a picture of the sky and you apply a computer-colored filter to it, and lo and behold, you've just proven the sky is purplish yellow. That's exactly how virologists create virus particles in a petri dish, by starving monkey kidney tissue of nutrients and then poisoning them with antibiotics and enzymes that kill the cells. And then as the cells break down, it creates the particles of dead cell debris. And they say, there it is, Pasteur's virus. Yeah, there it is, the sky is purplish yellow. Of course, in real life, the sky is blue, and in real life, virologists never see virus particles until they starve, poison, and kill the cells. That is because viruses are dead cell debris, and germs are dead cell debris eaters. The three most commonly asked questions are, what about chickenpox and chickenpox parties? And what about sexually transmitted diseases? Why is it 3 out of 4 people in our family all got sick at the same time together? How do you explain those? These are excellent questions, and this must be covered in 2 parts. First, the fallacy in all of these questions. And secondly, what is the method of these biological triggers if it's not caused by contagious germs and viruses? Unfortunately, the area of science pertaining to the second question is something big pharma and universities will never give research grants to properly investigate, as it will take down their multi-trillion dollar a year allopathic drug empire. Only an idiot would fund their own demise. But first, the fallacies. Correlation does not imply causation. Nobody ever asked why 5 or 6 of the 12 kids at the chickenpox party didn't break out with chickenpox. Or why did some of them break out weeks later? Or why do some only child infants break out with chickenpox when they are not exposed to anyone with those symptoms? Or why some of those babies' mothers don't express measles or chickenpox when they themselves are either unvaccinated or haven't had any booster shots in 20 years? Nobody asks why it is that some sexually promiscuous people who have herpes or genital warts have unprotected sex with a dozen partners, and only a few of those partners break out with their own symptoms, and the other 10 walk away with a smile on their face. Why don't they all catch it? Nobody asks why it is that the 4th family member is totally fine and healthy, while the other 3 seem to get sick together. Why isn't the entire family sick in every single case? I mean, isn't that why people are standing 6 feet apart and wearing diapers over their faces? I think this guy knows the answer. And more importantly, why is it that some of the kids who attend a chickenpox party do break out with pox themselves shortly after? Why is it that some of the sexual partners do break out with some kind of herpes or warts after sex with a person expressing that dis-ease themselves? And why is it that 3 out of 4 family members all do seem to get sick together? Remember, there is only one disease, toxemia, either from environmental or improper food beverage intake, pharmaceutical poisons, or from lack of oxygen and high acidity in the blood due to poor diet, major mental stress, and lack of exercise and improper shallow breathing. And that's what happens in the cases of these families. And there are too many examples to list, but the families share the same environmental toxins, products, crappy acidic nutrient-devoid diets, and similar stress causes, often from each other. But one of the family members is doing something differently, is less stressed than their nature, eats raw, uncooked foods more often, drinks bottled water, uses less toxic hygiene skin and shower products, or eats foods and snacks that don't touch toxic dish detergent plate and glass residue, doesn't eat sugar and chemical-filled junk food and candy, or drink acidic sugar-filled beverages, doesn't take pharma products, isn't home as much as the others. You get the idea. Basically, they have less toxemia, more alkaline pH, less stress, and more oxygen. Many families get sick because they don't open the windows and let bad air out and fresh air in for a few hours every day during the winter because it's cold out, or in the summer because they have air conditioning. Remember, the human breath exhales over 3,500 compounds, many of which are toxic. And if you don't air them out, you are living in a deadly gas chamber together, like the many men who accidentally killed their wives by jokingly putting them in a Dutch oven, holding their wives under the covers and farting after eating some toxic gas-producing food like Mexican food. The nurse, Florence Nightingale, was famous for opening the windows in the hospital room where dozens of sick men were sharing cots, and found that they all got better within a week to a few months. She said, "Fresh air is the first step to good nursing," and also found that it reduces stress levels as well in the patients. When you get sick, you are simply going through a natural emergency detox procedure as your body tries to heal itself and expel your toxic overload and dead cellular debris from that damage through your excretory organs by coughing, sneezing, burping, farting, vomiting, runny nose mucus expulsion, diarrhea, constant urination, and if you're really sick, your body will shake and fever to expel the toxins through your sweat glands and your skin. In cases of mild toxemia built up over time, various organisms do this on regular natural cycles, no different than the leaves falling off of trees in the fall and growing back in the spring. We call this cold and flu season. That doesn't mean that the body only does this during these cycles. You may not be toxic enough to need this, so you don't break out with the flu detox. Or you may have a riotous summer of gluttony and have to do this in the middle of the summer. You don't catch a cold, and the flu is not from contagious germs and viruses. It is the body's way of detoxifying itself from the poisons you yourself bombard it with. You can't catch somebody's flu any more than you can catch acne from a teenager or catch your grandmother's old age. That's why some people never get the flu. But why do the 3 family members who are toxic all get sick and start their detox at the exact same time? Well, why do the menstrual cycles of groups of women who live together and work together all suddenly change cycles and match up together perfectly? Why does one person start laughing uncontrollably on a bus and suddenly the entire bus is laughing hysterically? Is there a physical particle called laughter that is contagious? Or is there an invisible energy wave exchange triggering other people to start doing the same? Why does a negative person walk into a room and suddenly change the whole vibe of the party and completely change everyone's mood? Other areas of science, like epigenetics, are starting to find out that we are electromagnetic beings made out of crystalline living water, and that our own internal biochemistry is capable of instantly changing its own molecular chemistry and structure, not only due to what we taste, touch, smell, see, and hear, but also by our own thoughts and our own beliefs. And now, by the invisible bioelectric fields of other individuals coming into contact with our own bioelectric or morphogenetic fields through what is called bioresonance and cymatic resonance. We have known since the Cleve-Baxter experiments in the 1960s that plants change each other's biological cycles and communicate in this way, and we are now learning that we are no different. We also know through Dr. Masaru Emoto's experiments that spoken and written words change the actual crystalline structures of the water that makes up well over 70% of our bodies and can cause healing or disease. So this person is toxic and acidic and starts his detox cold or flu. He tells these people, "I hope we're not all going to get sick." And since they all believe in germ theory nonsense, these two's five senses see and hear him getting sick, coughing, puking, nose running, fevering. They smell his gaseous mouth and anus shedding of toxins and bathroom residue, and his own bioelectric field interacts with their fields, coupled with their own belief in contagion and that he will make them sick, tells their bodies it's time to start your own detoxification process, just the same as plants do. And this changes their molecular biochemistry to start this cycle prematurely, just like women's menstrual cycles syncing up. Chickenpox and measles are normally childhood growing diseases, which are basically fibrin disturbances leading to thick blood or embolus, causing swelling and skin exudations or red bumps on the skin. This is from a nutritional lack of potassium chloride and iron after changing diet from the mother's potassium-rich breast milk to regular foods, or for infants, from stress and either being poisoned by their toxic mother's milk or they aren't getting enough potassiums and irons from a malnourished mother. So it's very easy to conceive that when one of these kids' bodies starts its detoxification cycle during a growth spurt to remove dead and dying childhood cell debris and hardened fibrin, his or her bioelectric field communicates with the children at the party that if their own body also has too much dead cell debris and hardened fibrin, it might be time to start his or her detox cycle as well. And it appears that they have caught some kind of contagious disease, even though the kids whose bodies are healthier or not malnourished or who are late growers don't need to detox fibrin yet, so they don't break out with the pox. If it were contagious germs or viruses, they would all break out. The doctors and scientists obviously find the dead cell debris they call viruses in this breakdown, as well as bacteria eating the debris and fibrin, and they blame those things for causing the disease, like blaming firemen for causing fires, since they are always found at the scene of a fire. The human excretory system has many organs, but aside from the skin in emergency detox situations, all of the toxins in our body come out of three places: the mouth, genitalia, and anus. These are saturated with toxin residue, and these are the exact three places we find so-called sexually transmitted diseases, meaning these people have become so toxic that the skin in these areas is used to expel the excess toxic buildup. Just like chickenpox, there are always dead cell debris we call viruses and bacterial debris eaters found at these sites, and once again, we falsely blame the firemen at the scene for causing the fire. This, too, happens in natural cycles, and they are no more contagious than a teenager's acne or Tide soap. They do, however, generate billions of dollars a year in profit for the pharmaceutical companies, selling people antibiotics and drugs that kill the janitorial bacteria and stop the body's detox process, making it appear like they have cured or treated you. And the contagion myth certainly helps keep the population down via the billion-dollar condom industry. However, it does appear that some, but not most or all, of the sexual partners of these people do break out with their own detoxification herpes and genital warts, and this too might very well be some kind of bioresonance phenomenon, with the bioelectric fields communicating during sex that it is time for the other toxic person to start their own detoxification of the excretory areas. Again, since Big Pharma controls the medical industry, they will never fund any serious studies into this phenomenon, and their controlled media goes out of its way to label this as pseudoscience, as again, only an idiot would fund the takedown of their own multi-trillion dollar a year cash cow. And that's why even the most prestigious of Big Pharma-controlled allopathic medical schools will not teach our doctors and scientists about the suppressed findings of Antoine Béchamp and Gaston Naissance, because they found out long ago that germs do not cause disease and that you cannot kill germs. They observed that germs are pleomorphic, meaning shapeshifters, and can change from tiny little microparticle-sized spores, called somatids, into thousands of different bacterial, yeast, and even fungal forms. And even in those forms, they can produce other spores called bacteriophages that bring information, amino acids, and nourishment to other bacteria and even cells. And if you kill these different forms with acids and poisonous colorant dyes like antibiotics, they just return back to somatid spores again until their environment or terrain is right for life. And back they come to life again, eternally. These spores are indestructible, even by radiation or severe dehydration. Have you ever noticed it's only hospitals that have these superbugs, or what they call hospital-acquired infections? That's because hospitals are the only place that pass out poisonous bacteria-killing antibiotics to everyone like they're candy. They even look like candy. But bacteria are smart and pleomorphic. You might turn them back into spores from bacterial rod form with antibiotics, but they can come back bigger, meaner, and hungrier by changing into larger yeast and fungal forms that now become more resistant to the antibiotics, and these are what they call superbugs. They are not supposed to be inside of you. These forms are for eating dead, rotting flesh, not for eating you alive, literally. Their drugs are causing this, not nature. And because they aren't taught this in med school, they are baffled by why you get a yeast infection after taking antibiotics. You don't get a yeast infection. Their antibiotics caused your bacteria to morph into a yeast form more resistant to their poisons. You would not have them if they would just leave your bacteria alone in their normal rod shapes to do its job in helping to heal and remove your toxic or damaged tissue. But they can't charge you money for going home, drinking plenty of water, getting fresh air, and plenty of rest until you heal. Iatrogenic means death or injury caused by a doctor treating you exactly as they were taught in their medical training. It is the leading cause of death every year in the United States. COVID-19 does not exist and is just a rebranded name for the seasonal flu detox that people with toxemia go through every flu season, which has magically disappeared worldwide now that they renamed it. But there was a very real death spike increase in many countries that was statistically used to justify the worldwide lockdowns being used politically for furthering Agenda 21 and the Great Reset.
And in London, they used the recovery study, was a special English program. They used this high dosage of hydroxychloroquine. And of course, doctors noticed it after a while. And then the studies were stopped. The studies were all stopped in all over the world. In Brazil, they stopped the study because of very bad heart complications. That's what I have to say. This hydroxychloroquine, if you use it in this high dosage, it does heart arrhythmias. And it does lethal heart arrhythmias. That's why it is used if you want to kill yourself.
Yes, for euthanasia.
And the question is, how could it happen? How could it happen that they take this high dosage? And the leader of this study, Professor Landry, was asked, how could it come that you take this high dosage? And he said, well, COVID-19 is a new disease and we have to start with something. So that was his answer. And another colleague asked him, well, but okay, it's a reasonable answer, but why this high dosage? Then he said, well, he looked how they had treated amoebiasis in the early days, and it was a similar, they took a similar amount of pills. And then the other doctor said, well, I never treated amoebiasis with hydroxychloroquine. We used hydroxyquinoline. I think he confused it. This man is a dangerous man. It is immediately toxic, and you get these lethal heart arrhythmias.
Beware the false prophets out there, pushing their lethal pharmaceutical anti-malarial drugs in the wrong doses as the cure or prevention for something that doesn't exist and doesn't cause disease. There is nothing to prevent or protect against. Viruses are dead cell debris, and germs are symbiotic with the human body and are our body's janitors, along with our white blood cells. We have no immune system. We have germs, enzymes, and white blood cells to neutralize and clean out toxins.